Hello, good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you're consuming this podcast. This is your host, Ayan. And you've tuned in to Bus Talk, a podcast about everyday at work, your life at work, your work-life balance. What we do in Bus Talk is quite simple. There is no big mumbo jumbo. There is no life-changing advice. There is no get promoted quick or quota-less techniques here. Instead, what it is, it's breaking down the complex answer or attempt to answer the questions that you always thought you could ask but didn't, or even if you did ask and perhaps never got the answers to. This is nothing but a summary of the 20 plus years that I've been around and interacted, engaged, learned, failed, and then learned again, unlearned so much, and try and see if I could share some of these thoughts with some of the pressing questions that we encounter every day at work. Given that I'm primarily from a sales and business development background, the content is more relatable for those people in these professions. However, if you're not from a sales or business development professional, much of the content will also be relevant to you or resonate with you, simply because you will be in an organization where similar situations will occur and happen. And so Bus Talk has been running for what now, 5 seasons, 160 plus episodes. So this year in particular, I've chosen to pivot a little more on sales and business development and topics around it. But if you are keen enough, you can go and check season 1 through 4. There are topics ranging from office politics to crazy situations to managing bosses to irate colleagues to difficult customers, anything and everything that you encounter at a regular workplace. So hop over there, check it out, and come back here and listen to a new episode every week. I pick up a topic, and this year in 2024, I've picked up a theme-based month. So if you haven't heard, the January theme was about building a robust team, and there were subtopics there, strategies to hire, onboard, structures that drive performance, and so on and so forth. In February, we switched to a little bit about LinkedIn, age of being present in the social media. How do you leverage LinkedIn? How do you reach out to a leader? Why don't leaders follow you or respond back to you, and what can you do about them? And some tertiary topics based on that. In March, we're talking about culture code, one of my favorite topics. And as the cliche goes, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So talking about how does a manager deal with a low performer or a bottom performer in the previous episode. And today I am going to talk the opposite of that, which is managing top performers / fostering team collaboration to a winning sales culture. So how do you build a winning sales team? And so a lot of the commentary will revolve around developing that culture code, which is healthy, which is positive, and which delivers results. As always, Bus Talk as a podcast, its intent is to make you think. So when you exit this episode, the whole goal is, well, I didn't think of it this way. Now I get something more to think about. If you are in that state of mind, or if you have that predicament, then the objective is met. It's not to question what you're doing. It's not to challenge, or it's not to say that what you're doing is wrong. Whatever works is the best mantra of all time. However, sometimes it helps if you get an alternative thought, and that's all there is to Bus Talk. As always, the disclaimer, any content that you hear on Bus Talk is from a personal point of view. None of my employers of past, present, or potentially future employers have any endorsement agreement, or they should not reflect on them at all. You get the thing. There is a disclaimer episode in case anybody's keen. You might want to go search that out. All right, with all those pleasantries aside, let's move on very quickly. Today we're going to talk about fostering a winning sales culture. What are the 5-6 points? Maybe there might be some more. And I'll touch upon what is developing a winning sales culture? Do you at all need one? Why can't just people walk into their offices and do their job? That's what they were hired for. That's what they were paid for. And so why is it that we need to then think about developing a winning work culture? And if we don't have one, then what happens? So a lot of curiosity around this. So I'll go free flow on this as we go deep into the episode. So let's dive right in. So I've listed down a few points which revolve around this main header, that of winning sales culture, right? So I'm thinking of what does it entail, the importance of leadership while shaping this, cultivating a collaborative environment. What about the team dynamics, their communication, their response, recognition and rewarding, learning, unlearning, development, overcoming challenges, then inspecting, monitoring, adjusting, and some examples. And then, of course, resilience and foreseeing the unforeseen, if at all that's possible. And then how do you actually land all of these thoughts from an implementable, executable plan, which yields or results eventually in developing a winning sales culture? Right, so let's start right at the top. How do you define the winning sales culture? I guess winning sales culture is not just about right off the gate, right? I mean, right off the bat. It's not about getting to 100% of your numbers or achieving your deadlines or deliverables or finishing a project. That is not a winning sales culture. Oftentimes, many managers, management define, oh, if you get to 100% every quarter, then that equals a winning sales culture. I mean, there is merit in the argument when you say, well, if the team was so unhappy, then you wouldn't have gotten to that 100%, isn't it? And there is a counter argument to that, that could in some sense be quiet achieving, if that was ever a term, in the sense the potential could have been 120%, but because there isn't a winning culture, in the absence of a winning culture, people are not doing what they could potentially do to maximize their potential. Instead, they're just doing just enough. So is that good enough? So upfront, if I were to say, how do you define a winning sales culture? My initial thoughts would be, what does your company want to do? Does it want to be, what's the personality of your company? I think it starts from there. Are you the serious type? Are you the funky types? Are you the intellectual types? Are you the curiosity types? Are you the quirky types? I don't know. You know, sometimes I've asked many leaders, what is your personality type, as in the company personality? So how do you define that? How do you even have a personality? I guess we do, right? Give you an example. If you say, take any of the big tech companies, would an IBM, for example, be the same as an SAP from a culture personality standpoint? So, and this is just my point of view, like I said. So I think IBM is more like the statesman, serious, composed, you know, that kind of a personality that conjures up in my mind. Whereas SAP comes across as the quiet, hard-working, let's not make too much noise, let's get stuff done. In contrast, if you say Google, for example, could be that I am quirky and smart and intelligent yet, whatever. That's the kind of vibe that you get. So I guess when you say defining a winning sales culture, kind of starts from that personality understanding. So what I'd love you to do is do an exercise at your workplace with your team, perhaps, and see if people can use one word as a personality type to define the company perception image in the market. And then once you have a word cloud, see if you can find a pattern out of it. Oh, it seems like it's leaning towards the more serious do your job kind of thing. Then that's a personality type, right? The hardworking, no nonsense, black and white kind of binary one and zero. There is not much room for maneuvering and all that. If that is your personality type, then the definition of developing a winning sales culture will have to tailor in and tie in according to that personality. If it is the let's have fun, let's explore, let's see if you can go and find something more and that kind of stuff, then the definition will be slightly different. So let's just pick two extremes and give you an example on those two extremes. One is, which I suspect is the case in most organizations, is the serious types, right? We are here to do business. We are here to help solve a customer's problem. And so we do what we need to do. That's a personality type. So the developing a winning culture there versus the other end of the spectrum, which is, well, let's be curious. Let's explore, be exploratory in nature. Let's find out if there are other possibilities. Let's not fear failing. That's the other type of company culture. And everything falls in between, I guess, somewhere or the other. But most will lean towards the right extreme that I just mentioned. So if you are in such a company where all of this, like, a great test would be that if you go and ask this simple question to your management in a town hall in a upcoming all hands call, that what is the company culture, and they go, what are you talking about again? Excuse me. Then you know it is absent and they are the serious kinds. And so what can you do at a management level? Like, you are a manager, you have a 15 member team or a 20 member team or whatever, you have two managers, whatever, you are the small business unit. Can you create a micro culture within the mega culture? The short answer is yes, you can. How do you do that? So if your Uber company image is that of a very serious elderly statesperson, where the person is just talks business, there is only the serious stuff that is going on, there is nothing wrong in you developing a micro fun culture within the team. It would be slightly in contrast to what you see the other teams do. And so you go to hire people who embody that. You know, you can't teach people to have fun at their job, but you can hire, if you hire correctly, chances are you will have a good mix of people. So if you have this 10 member team, you can designate in your mind, back of your mind, and if you're in that position of luxury and choice, of course, those are the disclaimers, where you hire two or three people who are the classical, you know, enthusiasm, quote unquote, enthu cutlet, as we used to call them, where people, you know, the generally excitable bunch, and they kind of bring a lot of energy. You know, we also did this mix in one of my previous organizations, where we hired right off the campus and brought them into an environment where they were mostly 15-year-olds or 20-year-olds as a work exercise. And you should have seen the energy on the floor, right? It kind of rubbed off on some of the senior statespersons or statespeople or statesmen, whatever, in the company. And even they felt more energized. Some did feel very uncomfortable, said, how juvenile behavior? Or how juvenile is this? This is so immature. And you know, that did happen too. But by and large, it was a positive experience. There was energy, there was verve and vibe. There's a whole lot of stuff happening, action happening. It became like a lively atmosphere. So I'm a big fan of campus hires, but when I say campus hires, means fresh graduates. You must have just got off campus or whatever. But you have like 0 to 1 year of work experience, and molding them, guiding them becomes a very challenging experience, but a fun experience nevertheless for the managers. But for the right bunch, they can become the best version of the company's culture, whichever way you want to direct them to. Right? And so developing a microculture. So if you have a 10-member team, you have three or four members who are very young, freshers, if you can afford them, if your work permits them. And then two or three in the middle who were perhaps the enthu cutlets in their previous lives, now have kind of settled down, but the core gene is still there, or the core DNA is still there, that of having fun and excitement. And then there are those who balance all this out and are grounded. And if you can get that healthy mix in the team, you kind of create a culture where it is a complementary skill set. And while there could be some conflicts that come, but as a manager, you are expected to have conflict resolution skill sets, right? And so while you would have this rich mix of people, there could be conflicts, and you manage those conflicts. If you're able to handle them, then you develop this team which rallies and bonds with each other on complementary skill sets instead of constantly trying to outdo the other, right? And in together, with such a rich experience, you can ensure greater productivity. And you as a manager, people manager, will always stay interested, invested, excited, because there are so many different things that are happening. It's not the same thing that is happening over and over again. It's different things that are happening and keeps you busy. Someday it will be someone who has difficulty in opening a conversation with a customer. Then there would be those who have been the classical conversationalists, and you can pair them together and say, hey, why don't you go buddy up? Then there are those who are the classical happy ears, easily excitable. And then you pair them with those who absolutely go, you know, beta testing on them, disqualify to qualify. Then you pair them up, and slowly each feeds off the other. Because if you get too cynical about every opportunity, then you slow down the velocity in the system as well, isn't it? You can't get happy ears and your pipeline starts to look flaky and all that. But somewhere one has to strike a balance between qualifying the right opportunity and having the right velocity to generate enough volume and reach and all that. So this is a healthy mix. And that's when you start to define a winning culture, that you have created your own culture within the team, and it's not to undermine your organizational larger culture, but it's to kind of complement it in some ways. Because it's also a reality that while you are hiring in the market, then the generation that you're hiring brings a certain part of their previous work culture into your environment, isn't it? And that may not synergize completely with how the organization is thinking. So you as a middle manager, as it were, need to find this middle ground where you develop your own fun system within the organization and yet blend in with the organizational seriousness of it all. Trust me, if you manage to do that over a period of time, you will build a legacy. You will build a memory that, oh, these were the best years of my life. And no MVP, no salary increment. And I say that a bit cautiously, because that set of people, or those ideals are dying or reducing mostly. All that matters is, as long as you give me more money, I am good to go. No, but I'm of the old school, so I appreciate those people who go around. There is a belief in why we are doing this. There's an element of passion. I want to do this for a greater cause, and a sense of pride to represent your organization. And so you develop that culture. Chances are you will build memories for your team, and people will reflect back years later and saying, you know, those were the best days of my life. And that's the best compliment you can get. And I've been fortunate to have received similar compliments in my career journey. I'm forever so grateful, because it takes two to tango. It's just not me, but I'm sure my teammates and team members had an equal part to play in that. And they were sporty enough to say, hey, even if at times I don't know if this is who I am or this is my personality, but they played along well and eventually found another facet of their personality. And it's a very satisfying experience when you've introduced a new experience, a new learning to your team. And so try being on that side, even if you... So the summary of this is create a microculture first in your environment when you are clear about what you want that microculture to do in the job, in the job profile that you're in. On the other hand, when you have leadership shaping sales cultures, shaping a winning culture, it is very important to know who your leaders are and what their culture is. Very difficult to answer such big statements, right? What is the leadership culture? Like, what do? You have a forecast, you have a quota, you meet that quota, and why do I need to have any other culture than you? Then I will turn up on every Q1 and say, wow, good job done. Come on, keep at it. Don't miss your forecast. Don't lose focus. I mean, is that wrong to say that? No, it's not wrong. I mean, it's required. And so what else does anyone say? And it's to be fair to organizations, right? Many times when management or organizations have tried to be quote unquote funny, it has been received with stoic silence. This like absolute zero response. Like nobody's even wanting to be a sport. Like they're thinking, oh God, this is yet another one of those stereotypical jokes coming around, and then everybody has this artificial laughter, and two, three people are talking amongst themselves, and then rest of the entire majority is quiet. And so I always ask them this question, that put yourself in your management's shoes and then tell me, what could you have done differently to evoke a response from the team? So as much as we want a leadership sales culture to be inclusive, to be more approachable, to be more fun, if you will, it also depends on how the team is responding. If you did your forecast accurately on a weekly basis, on a monthly, quarterly basis, if business was happening well, then I'd be surprised if people wouldn't celebrate a little more. But as it turns out, when you're trying to run a business, you're always catching up. You're always running behind. There is a need to push people. And I've been in a leadership role for a very long time, so I can tell you, teams don't auto-function. They don't auto-run, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't need leadership, right? All of you know what you need to do. You've signed on those contracts. You know what needs to be delivered. Yet, if you did not have a leader, you should automatically deliver what you're supposed to deliver, isn't it? But as it turns out, it doesn't happen like that. And so you do need somebody to be the guardrail sometimes, sometimes the energizer, sometimes the disciplinarian, and sometimes the inspiration, and sometimes the reality check. That these kind of things define the need to have this kind of situations define the need to have a leader or leadership, and therefore the culture mirrors the state of the economy of your business. If your business is doing well, we generally see little more interactions, fun stuff, people crack jokes, people are feeling confident, there's a bit of a swag, there's a bit of almost, I would say, heightened optimism that, yeah, this will happen. You can say overconfidence, but I was saying heightened optimism, that you're so sure you'll get there. So that is a great place to be, because the energy is very infectious and you catch on that, versus those situations where the organization has not done well. And therefore, when the organization has not done well at a global level, at a senior level, at a market level, pressure comes on the leadership team to balance out the messaging. On one hand, you want to deliver a strong message that we have to, buckle up, pull up a socks, hit that ground running, and which is absolutely needed. On the other hand, you don't want to be so hard that people kind of switch off and say, this is not my cup of tea. And so the leadership culture largely defines around or revolves around that, establishing that middle ground. So for any of you thought, why is your manager suddenly being so hard and so difficult? Because there could have been a messaging that there could be an upcoming, maybe a difficult situation coming up. And so let's make sure that we come together quicker, faster, galvanize and show results more than what you normally do. It kind of helps give the message that this is a valuable team continuing to deliver over and beyond. And that's how, you know, sometimes I feel many of the teammates, team members in non-managerial positions, they often tend to believe that the manager's job is only to you know, be this collections agent who will go around the room and ask for revenue or ask for forecast and all. And that's the only job they do. They write a couple of reports and hang around with their managers, and they come over to some of our calls when we have done all the heavy lifting and hard work, and they will only come and, you know, quick some sweet nothings and then go away and take all the credit for all the hard work that we do. Let me tell you, it's slightly different. And I'm sure there are such managers out there. But for many such situations, part of the job is to absorb the pressure that comes from up above, from other situations, and not be the gateway to all the pressure. Instead, be the filter to the pressure, where we absorb the messaging, process it, and cushion the team so that they can remain focused and not get randomized and overworked and overworried. And that's the reason why you are a manager, because you now possess that degree of maturity that you know what piece of information to communicate and how to communicate and how much to channelize and how much to keep it without destroying anybody's confidence, you know. And so there's a lot of optics which go around, and so the manager takes your performance or the team's performance and showcases to their manager and management to reassure the powers that be that the business is doing well, the business is on track, so don't worry, we are good. And what that does is it rolls right up to the top and it gives the confidence. It's like a snowball effect by the time it reaches right to the top. So never underestimate the fact that if your manager is trying to keep you encouraged or sometimes is hard on you, doesn't mean that the team culture has gone down the drain and people are just do not appreciate what we are doing. Sometimes there is immense pressure which is cushioned and only a part of it comes to you, and the part that is relevant to you comes to you. Rest of the stuff is managed upwards. And so developing this leadership culture of having positivity, of having enough maturity to mix and match as the situation arises is a great leadership team to have. Oftentimes we find people are very rigid, they're unidimensional, and that's unfortunate. And if you have such a management, it is difficult. I do not underestimate how difficult it is. That the team is very excitable, but the leadership is very rigid, and like the classical term, aise thodi hota hai, which means this is not how it happens. It's like the confirmation bias. For those who don't get in, the many leadership team cultures are based on confirmation bias, which say, okay, I know how the cookie crumbles. I know how this is going to roll out. So you have to do this, or you might want to do this, and so on and so forth. And until they're proven wrong, which then they find it very difficult to backtrack. So it's a blessing if you have a very flexible, agile sales leadership or management, which in itself is a strong sales culture to have. So the importance of leadership, like I mentioned, importance of you as a manager, managing your team to develop a culture, and then importance of your management or sales management to develop a culture is as important. moving forward, a collaborative environment. So how do you cultivate a collaborative environment, the team dynamics and communications? I think let's touch upon the communications bit. Like I said, a team needs to be communicated very clearly what the expectations are. I mean, you know that you've got to do X dollars by the end of the quarter, end of the month, or end of the week. That's not the surprise part. Communication is much more than that. The communication is the inspection, the clarity, the purpose behind the goal. When you have a conversation with your team member, you've got to let them know why we are doing this, what are we going to do about it, and how we are going to go about it, and be aligned at all times. And it is a consistent activity, persistent and consistent activity, that you are monitoring this regularly so that your team and you end at the right point. Many times I've found leaders, because the communication part is missing. You know, it's a very reserved manager, very introverted, quiet manager, doesn't talk much. And it almost comes very, like, very authoritarian. Like, okay, this is how you do it. And when you talk to that manager, they say, what else am I supposed to do? I'm just doing my job. I need to take forecast from my team. There is no sweet talking this, right? It is a serious business. I don't want to miss my forecast. So technically, are they wrong? You would say, no, they're not wrong. But there is a way of getting things done. That's why people management is different. It is difficult. You're not talking to a robot. You're not talking to a machine. You're talking to a human. And so it requires a very different approach. And what is the different approach? That all 10 members of your team cannot be communicated the same way. Of course, there are common messages which you do on a weekly basis, but all 10 members having the same message landed sometimes might not be enough. So you will have to have a separate one-on-one where you share that part of the communication. And so that transparency, that ability to be understood, the ability to be adaptable, to listen, also form a part of your communication culture. So that's how you collaborate, cultivate a collaborating environment where everybody has a platform to speak up. Everybody has a platform to be heard, to be understood, and given their respect. And so you get them more inclusive. You know, you as a manager have to make this important decision of what to share and what not, and how much. You have to also understand this person's capability to handle that kind of information. Many a times I've seen that there have been managers who've been very earnest, very forthcoming, and they almost become oblivious to the fact that, yes, you want to share everything, but can the person take it at the other end? And they just don't know. And so they overload this person, who then becomes absolutely confused and or starts to form a wrong perception. In many a cases, even undermine the manager. It has a counter. You think as a manager that you're being very transparent, very open. But on the other hand, it's not being appreciated at all. And so the guy is thinking, well, such a loser of a manager. I could have done this even better. I don't know what he's doing or what he's thinking. Those kind of things. And so that leads to a very difficult team culture situation where it's like a no confidence motion within the team. Team loses confidence in their leader and says, I don't think this person can run the team. And that is a difficult proposition for any manager, because once that happens, they start to skip level. So they will go and reach out to your manager or their manager or your peer. And then they will say, hey, you know, because then don't keep quiet, right? People, nobody keeps quiet. And so all you have is then you start defending yourself, letting everybody know that, hey, listen, this is what I meant to say, but this is how it was. And you can't fight the whole system. And before you know, the HR walks into the room and says, looks like your people management abilities and capabilities are not up to the mark. Very difficult situation for managers to then get into a 360-degree review when the team, you know, just unloads the Venom, the entire vengeance agenda against the manager, and then you know what happens, right? People are eased out of the system and so on and so forth. Whereas some of these things could have been solved if there was maturity all around. And it starts with the maturity of the manager themselves, that they needn't have been so transparent and so translucent. Sometimes managing that balance is, sometimes always managing that balance is as important. It's also important that your management, as in your manager's manager or skip levels, have that maturity to see through what's happening. And in this day and age where there is so much of overload of work, the bandwidth is limited, very difficult for senior management to go skip level and see what exactly, I mean, are you not able to handle this? I mean, seriously, I can't spend time figuring out what your team's team is doing while I have to manage four other things, managing the company's profitability here. And so it's like a, you know, if I were to sum this up for you, it's like, is it one person's fault? Is it the system's fault? I don't know. It could be a collective failure, that it is impossible, on one hand, that the person you hired after 10 rounds of interviews or 5 rounds of interviews over speaking to 6 people, who was arguably the best candidate over 30 other people that you interviewed, suddenly becomes this one person who is absolutely untenable to be in the organization. So it's a failure of the system from that standpoint, but it's also the failure of the manager to not foresee this and align quicker and faster and be agile. So the team culture therefore needs to be that of maturity, that of seeing through, having a zoomed out view of, and also have a detailed view. And so very important that the leadership culture is developed, is designed around collaboration, neutral platforms and communication where people freely share their thoughts and perceptions and see, sometimes have a myth-busting exercise. I don't know, but you know, these are my perceptions about our business. Is this accurate? Is this not? And so always, it's not a one-off project. It's a way of life. You have to continuously keep on doing that. All right. Moving on. So communication, recognizing and rewarding success, incentive recognition programs, learning and development, overcoming challenges. These are some of the other things that create an impact on the culture. Many a times people are very quick to criticize a bad performance and very reluctant, very delayed to recognize performance or recognize a situation. That's one set of people. There are those set of situations where people take the other extreme because the HR said so, the company culture said so, that I have to now praise anything and everything. It almost becomes farcical. You know, you're doing BAU, business as usual. That does not warrant an appreciation mail. An appreciation mail is warranted when you have done something over and beyond, something extraordinary, probably has a team-wide or an org-wide impact. Of course, you should appreciate it. Then you can't go into that first bucket of people and say, oh, he was just doing his job, it's part of the job. Oh, we have seen this before. Yeah, whatever. Then you can't be so cynical about it. And now you understand, right, how the whole area that we are operating right now in this commentary is all the grays, are the gray areas, right? So there is no black and white. So you are perpetually going to be in the grays, where on one hand, you want your management to be a little more forthcoming, upfront is what I was thinking, or forthcoming in recognizing and appreciating a good job done. It really motivates people. There is that need for approval, right? All said and done. When you're skip level or someone comes and say, hey, good job done, this is really good, and they mean it, it gets to you, and it comes to you, it lands. Whereas you are always sure that if you miss the number, forecast, quarter, whatever deadline, then the tough love message is going to come, and it's almost spot on the syllabus. Shape up or ship out, time's running out, this is it, you know, it's not happening. Those are the messages that you know will happen, and they exactly happen like that. And so recognizing and rewarding, timely recognizing and rewarding develops a positive team culture. And it is, again, not a project. It's a way of life that you do that and people start appreciating the good stuff that they're done. People often get too caught up in this celebration of small success kind of thing, but let that not be BAU. I mean, I'm happy to, if somebody's feeling low, I'm happy to go and, you know, pat them on the back and say, hey, cheer up, it's okay. And that's fine, but it can't be done regularly for every small thing. So somewhere strive to do something big, which warrants an appreciation. And if you're the person responsible to give appreciation, ensure that it is in time and not delayed. Lastly, building resilience and empowering your team. We all go through unforeseen situations. We all go through unanticipated circumstances, like maybe there's a layoff, maybe there is a cost cut, maybe somebody else got promoted. That triggers a very negative perception within the team. The morale is low. It impacts. People get scared. People are worried. People fear change. As much as they want to leave, they also don't want to leave, right? Because they know that if I leave and go elsewhere, then the clock resets itself and I have to reprove that I'm a good employee and everything. So on one hand, they're unhappy here, and then they're not so sure they're going to be happy there. So they think, they justify that to themselves that, oh, I'm getting more money, so that means I will be happier. So they're saying, I want 30% more is what most people ask for. Is it also true you get 30% more happiness? Guess not. And so when you have these situations, building or resilience and empowering your sales team is very important. How do you do that? You give people responsibility. Giving responsibility and giving them a task, in my view, I know it's a, you know, play of words, but I think it's slightly different. A task is almost dictatorial. It's like, do it. And empowering and giving responsibility is almost like owning it. You internalize it and say, it's my mission now. It's like the transference of mission. Okay, now it's my business as well. So when sometimes, you know, people drive for forecasts and it almost seems like the manager is she's the like lone soldier fighting with going and powering ahead. It shouldn't be like that. You need, it is our business. It's our mission. It's together we have to achieve. You are here to be successful in your role. And the day that changes, the day that definition, that understanding changes, then you should look for another role or another company. Because the manager is supremely clear that you are here to be successful. So you will be, for most part, self-motivated, self-driven, not waiting for a pat on the back. If it comes by, then it's a great bonus. If it doesn't, you still get there. You still get to 100%. You're not hired for 99%. You're hired to do 100%. And so you getting to 110% is probably when you need that culture. It's when you need that push, that's that inner drive that comes from having being in a state of responsibility, that you are empowered to take decisions. And so carve out those decisions basis your team situation. What is it that they can do? What decisions can they take? And if there are situations where you cannot take a decision, can you collectively brainstorm together and let that one person take the decision, like the manager? Those parts are good. And so sensitizing the team on what is possible, what is not possible, what is negotiable, what is non-negotiable, it's a good culture building exercise. It's a good empowering exercise that, look, don't shoot the messenger. I am following the rules I signed up for. You have to believe that this is what the company has laid down for the management to follow, and I'm just following that. So having that transparency with the team is not such a bad thing, right? So therefore you develop this resilience, you build maturity, you build tenure. I think one of the big thing, a good culture, a strong team culture leads to a longer tenure. It's as simple as that. Long tenure almost always leads to a higher productivity. And when, like I said, the best compliment that a team, a manager, a company can get is when they say, those were the best years of my life or best quarters of my life. And so think about all these things. Very difficult to stitch together fabric of culture when there are so many moving parts. There are so many deliverables and deadlines and pressing politics and everything is all around you. You as a team, as a management, need to certainly have your own team culture, partly to isolate them from all the noise that is around and keep them focused, and also at the same time develop that maturity that if there's something disturbing comes along, something difficult comes along, the team rises to the occasion. And that's how you navigate, right? Think of it as a sailboat on choppy waters. And you have to be this skillful navigator where you know when to slow down, when ask them to take it easy. Yes, and yes, you have to say that. You heard that right. As managers, you have to tell your team from time to time, it's all right, slow down right now. By slow down doesn't mean quiet quitting. By slowing down means mentally unwind and, you know, come back to neutral, then recharge and then reboot and re-engage at the same level. And this management of pull and push is what all team culture is all about. Well, that's all the time I had for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as I had sharing it with you. I was visualizing all my experiences over the years, and some of them are very fond memories where I still remember and I'm still those memories never fade away. They're fresh in your mind. What is your favorite memory? What's your favorite quarter? Which has been your favorite period in your career? Leave me a note, leave me a comment, leave me a review if you want to. Go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. If you can scroll down and leave a voice message, that'd be great as well. And if you're so kind, then you can also reach me on LinkedIn. That's IN/IanBan, AAYANBAN. Easily available on X as well. That's Ianisms, # AAYANISMS. And of course, for all the previous seasons, you can go to www.bastalk.in. That's bustalk.in. And you'll find all the previous four seasons and, of course, season five as well. That's it. In the next episode, I will continue this journey of culture code, building culture teams. And we spoke about building a winning culture in this episode. I'm going to talk about a burnout. Many of you feel tired or mentally broken or there's no energy left. So how do you cope the burnout, not just as a manager, people manager, but also if you are the one who is burnt out right now, how do you manage and cope with that situation? So we'll touch a little bit on that in the next episode. If that's what fascinates you, then be sure to tune in next week and I will try and come back with an exciting episode. I will be on the road for the next week or two, and in case I miss posting next week, please don't worry. I will make up for it and post it as soon as I find a breather. The book, as you many of you know, is being edited as we speak by a publisher. Hopefully that edit will complete and we'll get the first final draft. I know it's a bit of an oxymoron, but stay tuned. I will let you know as we come close to publication. Well, that's all. Take care. Watch where you're walking and share with all those who care. Stay well, stay safe. Keep listening to Buzz Talk. This is your host, Ian, and I wish you a great week ahead.